Asian history is contained in the Box of Delights. Hello, I'm Julia Rayside. Each episode, my guest chooses a favourite TV memory to talk about.
And welcome to the Box of Delights, and I'm really sorry it's been 100 years since the last episode. And joining me today, you'll be shocked and amazed to discover it's my husband because he's here, but also a fascinating, fascinating podcast guest, Joel Morris. Welcome to the Box of Delights.
This is the key, isn't it? Be available.
Be here, be free.
Yes.
And it's short notice. No, honestly, we felt bad about not doing the podcast. We really enjoy doing the podcast. It's been really nice to be busy, but I've really missed this.
Yes.
It's always fun chatting. I thought what we'd do, we're sitting in a room with a Christmas tree with too many baubles on. I've just had a Quality Street. You've just had a Satsuma.
Yeah, I had a Quality Street before then, but you didn't know I'd had a Quality Street.
Oh,
so
you?
I covered it up
you
by having fruit.
It. Literally, you've got Satsuma breath to hide the chocolate breath.
Yeah.
You little sneak.
It's cunning, isn't it?
But I thought with that in mind, seeing as everything smells like Christmas anyway,
and
guilty Satsumas, that we just talk about memories of Christmas telly in general, because we've just got the Radio Times, rather late in the day, I might add.
Yes.
I'm just wading through that now, seeing what's coming. We're looking forward to, oh my gosh, the Ghost Christmas special, the last ever episode, Doctor Who.
Feels quite a trad Christmas this year, doesn't it?
It does.
Feels like there's actually some things in the schedules.
Well, this is what I want to talk about. So are our memories of supposedly trad, like childhood Christmases on telly, are they rose-tinted or was it really amazing?
I don't know. That won't have been helped by it. I remember for years and years moaning that all that there was on television for about 10 years maybe were programmes about how television used to be good.
So you go,
what's on TV? Oh, it's 100 years of Morecambe and Wise. Oh, it's the Good Life Christmas special. And then people reminiscing about the Good Life Christmas special. And you got a feeling, I did wonder, because I lived through a lot of that and remembered liking it.
Yeah.
But I did wonder what our kids thought when they were watching TV with grands and granddads, and all the TV was, it was the ultimate boomer thing to say, you missed it. It was sense of, it was just like clip shows about the great comedy shows that used to be on in the past.
Yeah.
Like we didn't make them anymore.
No, it's almost like we've been looking at too many photographs and now we don't know what we remember about the past and what we've just seen photos of.
Yeah.
And edited highlights is cheating anyway, those best of shows. Just as a little jumping off point, some very nice person who, I can't find an author's name anywhere, but someone who owns the website ukchristmastv.weebly.com.
Amazing.
Thank you to them. They've compiled BBC run up to Christmas and Christmas Day listings, some with more information than others, but basically I can tell you we can go to Christmas Day 1980 now.
Right.
I suppose we could do this with what was that project that the BBC did? It was almost like a time machine. You could put a date in and see what was on TV that day.
Oh right, Genome.
Yeah, the Genome thing.
I think the Doomsday book.
Maybe
had
someone
it on CD.
Just whipped it off the
on
Genome.
Laserdisc.
Anyway, I can take you back now to Christmas Day 1980. So 25th of December 1980. I would have been 5.
Well, I would have been about.
You'd have been like
10,
28. I'm being cruel. For me, this is quite young, but for you, this is a Christmas Day you probably...
Is it mainly Noel
remember?
Edmonds? I remember it would mainly be Noel Edmonds in my head.
I think he kicked in a bit later on. So it starts off with Watch the Story of the Nativity with James Earl Adair and Louise Hall Taylor at 8:55 a.m.
Watch, so, great programme.
Okay, but you know, there's a little bit of religion, only half an hour. Mr. Ben Pink Panther. Morning worship from 10 till 11.
Quite religion heavy.
So you go to, I think this one was from...
God still owned Christmas back then.
Cathedral Church of St. Peter and Paul Clifton. That's quite a long... Is that Bristol? I don't know. Anyway, it's quite a long name for a church.
It's quite goddy, isn't it?
Yeah, then there's a bit of weather. 11 a.m, the first film of the day, The Wonderful World of the Brothers Grimm. Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely, 1962. Sounds great. 1 p.m, Carols from Warwick Castle, hosted by Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
What the hell?
I mean, that does sound quite Christmas Day.
Swashbuckling God.
Then, of course, you get Top of the Pops at 2 o'clock for an hour just before the Queen.
Yep.
So that's ABBA, Blondie, David Bowie, Pink Floyd, The Police and the Nolans. Like, and it's hosted by Peter Powell and, God love him, Jimmy Savile, OBE.
Oh, you see.
And the OBE does appear in the listings, which I'm sure was contractual.
That's amazing. So pretty much it's been God...
Yeah.
Pretty God heavy. And then Top of the Pops is a break with that.
Just only for an hour. Then you get the Queen, who also mentions God usually quite a lot.
It's quite trad, isn't it?
In the olden days. Then you get the big film at 3:10 p.m. So, and it's actually listed proudly as a terrestrial premiere of the 1954 classic 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
My God. So it's been in a draw for 26 years.
That's nuts. So, but the thing I did like, and I think the thing we all remember, and now I don't know how any of the big broadcasters choose their, quotes, Christmas Day films. So, you know, after lunch, middle, early afternoon, supposedly when everyone's either snoozing or sitting down with their, you know, batteries and presents trying to work out how they work, there's a big movie. And in the old days, that was one you missed at the cinema because your parents didn't take you to every film that came out because that cost lots of money. It would be on the TV on Christmas Day and it would be something you would unbelievably look forward to. And now it's just like something you could watch on streaming in a minute if you give £2 to YouTube or whatever. It's just not as special anymore. But that was really special, I remember. The Christmas Day film was like a big wow.
Because they'd save it up. There'd be a couple of... That was the feeling I think you used to have with Christmas Day. Because Christmas is all about anticipation. It's not really about...
The moment the anticipation ends is rubbish.
Yeah, so it's about anticipation. So you build up to some things that only happen once. So you have the Queen only appears on television once a year. Mork and Wise have one big show. The real interesting thing about all those great comedy shows is sometimes when they show the ones that weren't the Christmas special, they're not very good. And the build up to them putting all their best material out would be that. And also the films. The films would be pretty much pedestrian the rest of the year.
I know.
But this was an era when I was growing up, where you could have a film premiere, if it was something like Jaws or Star Wars, it would be on the front of the Radio Times.
That the would cover be the big story
would be
that week.
A picture of Darth Vader. And
absolutely.
You'd go, oh my God, you've put a film on. Yeah. And now it's really hard to remember as a parent that films for your kids aren't as special.
No, they're not. And they're easier to access, which means they're not rare metal, are they? They're just like, oh, there's one. I can reach for it now.
And actually what it probably is for those kids, I talked about this before, saying Marvel should stop making films and just make trailers.
Yeah.
As it, the, again, the
give them something to look forward to.
The anticipation. Kids looking forward to Doctor Who is always more exciting than watching Doctor Who.
Although the last three episodes, I beg to differ.
They've lived up to it, but still that idea that kids love waiting for things and waiting for a present. And
they love complaining about waiting for things.
Yeah, and then when it finally arrives, it's not as important as the waiting for it. And I think that having made films sort of pedestrian and ordinary, because growing up with kids, as a parent, you sort of, shut up and watch a film.
Yeah.
It's almost like the film was a punishment for your kids. It doesn't feel as special now, but I love the idea of it being the premiere of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Starring Kirk Douglas and four James Mason. Yes, please. Yeah. After that, so at 5:15, this is still Christmas Day, 1980, the Paul Daniels Magic Show. Now, that would have been a big, shiny, spangly, exciting event. You were definitely a magic-fascinated kid, weren't
first you? First time I'd ever been to the theatre was to come see Paul Daniels.
Your dad took you to see Paul Daniels, and then years later, we took him to see Derren Brown.
As a return.
Kind of,
but I'd never been to the theatre. Paul Daniels, of course, incredible. People forget he was brilliant.
Oh, what a showman.
When
just
he died,
terrific.
A friend of ours tried to get the channels interested in doing like a best of the Paul Daniels Magic Show, and no one wanted to show it. He'd sort of fallen from grace to a level that...
It's felt to be old-fashioned, I think, isn't it, magic on telly?
Was great. Well, because he wasn't doing it in a Derren Brown or Dynamo or David Blaine way. But you should put some old Paul Daniels on. It's really good. Magic doesn't change. It's the same tricks.
Yeah, you're right.
But I love Paul Daniels as a kid.
Some of the guests he had on as well. So he's quite one for special, like, I guess when he had a special episode. Oh. He could bring in his international magician friends and kind of have a really exciting lineup. So it says, Paul Daniels is joined as he conjures up a host of seasonal surprises and introduces his special guests with their remarkable skills. From Broadway, America's foremost magician, Harry Blackstone.
Harry Blackstone,
heard
of course.
Him? Yeah. From Paris, the dazzling puppets of Compagnie Philippe Gentil. From Hollywood, the quick change talents of Michael McGivney. And from Japan, the ballerina on a golden bicycle, Lily Yokoi.
It feels like a Victorian circus poster.
Yeah, it does.
Isn't that lovely, that old variety thing, which is now just Britain's Got Talent.
I'd watch a big old variety magic show on Christmas Day, wouldn't you?
I should bring it back.
It'd be like opening something really exciting.
Actually, it'd be a nice one for the most unexpected thing Channel 4 could do is get Derren Brown to front a variety show.
And he'd do it so brilliantly. The ultimate showman now.
Really, really trad.
Then we got, so that was a big old chunk of magic there on Christmas Day, sort of early evening, into the 6:05 p.m. news, obviously hosted by Angela Rippon. I'm saying hosted. I mean, she read the news. She didn't host it.
She wrote it. It's hers. Created showrunner, Angela Rippon.
I imagine on Christmas Day, who else do you want you to read, to read the news to you? It's her.
Then
it's
waiting for her to high kick. Come on.
But then it's the Generation Game. Then it's Dallas, which I thought was a random thing to show on Christmas Day. But I guess it's something for the mums then while...
But it was so big in 1980.
Maybe the dads have gone to the pub.
This is around Who Shot JR time. This
yeah.
is, it's massive. Yeah, that's your EastEnders.
Yeah. Because,
of course, this is pre-EastEnders.
Actually, that's
What's
true.
What's the BBC's big soap? It's an import. It's Dallas.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that amazing? They still have, that's a really good point. So Dallas and then the Mike Yarwood Christmas show, which would have been the big comedy, I guess. That would have been the old Morecambe and Wise slot, but maybe it would have moved up earlier in the evening.
Everyone forgets.
This is at 8 p.m.
Everyone forgets. If you look at the most watched comedy shows of all time, Eric and Ernie are quite low down.
Are they?
We remember them uniting the nation, but Mike Yarwood has more entries in that top 10
I
than
bet.
They did.
Yeah,
Benny
yeah.
Hill does really well. And my favourite unexpected thing, the one of the most watched comedy shows of all time, To the Man of Bourne.
Oh,
the Christmas special
God,
where
the
they get
best.
Married.
Yes!
Or is it the last episode of the first series where they get married?
Yeah.
Is way more watched than any of the things that you think unite the nation. But Mike Yarwood was absolutely massive, bigger than Eric and Ernie some years.
Amazing.
Did really good numbers.
Oh, facts. I love the facts.
Yeah.
So that's a lovely 40-odd minutes of comedy and all of his funny stuff, followed then, I think, quite austerely by Airport 1975, starring Charlton Heston, which just seems, I haven't seen it, but the description of it just sounds a little bit like, oh, buzzkill.
And also, I'm doing my dates here. Is it the year after Airplane?
Maybe we've stopped taking
disaster movies seriously. It's a funny one to put on because the disaster movie golden age is sort of 74 to 76.
Yeah.
And then we're sort of past that point, but TV's only just got the rights to it.
Yeah.
If they've only just got the rights to Disney, they've only just got the rights to that.
That's it. So Airplane is 1980. It's the same year. Judging from the poster, it looks like a disaster film. A 747 in flight collides with a small plane and is rendered pilotless. Somehow the control tower must get a pilot aboard so he can... Yeah, how weird that it's the same year.
That's crazy.
Actually, no, sorry. It was made in 1974.
It's a 1974 movie, but they're showing it the year that we're starting to take the piss.
That's what's confusing me. Obviously, I'm just assuming that something gets made and goes immediately to television.
No, it's many, many years later.
Then Angela Rippon's back with more news, thank heavens, and the weather with Jim Bacon. No idea.
And then go to bed.
No. Obviously, I'd be in bed long before this. Like, I think I was in bed when I was at this age, 7:30.
Really?
Probably even on Christmas Day.
Your parents had programmes they wanted to watch.
I mean, they seriously, they clearly did. They wanted to get all excited watching To the Man of Bourne, I imagine. 10:40 p.m. Parkinson at Christmas.
Oh yeah,
with someone called Ben Vereen. Have heard Ben Vereen?
Nope.
No, I don't know who that is.
Isn't that amazing how someone can be famous enough to open a Parky Christmas and you don't know who they are?
I'm going to look up Ben Vereen. I'm guessing not a British actor because I probably would have heard of them. James Galway and Penelope Keith.
Oh, you see, it's quality.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. She's basically the other queen, isn't she? So we have to have her on. Just going to look up Ben Vereen now. So
is it Wolverine's brother?
I don't Ben Vereen. Sounds like cough medicine. Oh, he's still alive. He's 77 years old. And he is, I would say, judging by that hat, an American. He's an actor, dancer and singer.
This is one of those distortions that happened.
Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar. There you go.
But this is a distortion that happened when we started looking back and Christmas TV started to be full of, it would be full of like the best of Billy Connolly, the best of Victoria Wood, the best of
already.
Parkinson or whatever. But the period they're looking back on, very often the Christmas special of those shows wouldn't be that special.
No,
it would have stars you've forgotten.
On that tip, the crowning, the last programme before the weather and close on Christmas night 1980 on BBC One is, and I quote, Christmas comedy classic, colon, Fawlty Towers.
Wow.
So that's already being, is that early 70s Fawlty Towers, mid 70s?
There's two series, one's sort of 75, 76, one's sort of 79. So
1980, it's already been called a comedy classic. That happened fast, didn't it?
Yeah.
Blimey, O'Reilly. And then, I'll keep fiddling around with this website and finding some more while we talk, because obviously they have lots of years available. You can just see what you were watching. Just on the BBC, I like that. That's very in keeping with my family and their viewing habits, that we wouldn't have probably had any excuse at all to watch ITV on Christmas Day.
You had two buttons on your television, didn't you?
Yes, didn't
BBC
everyone?
One, BBC Two.
Yes.
And the third one had sellotape over
just
it.
Just lots of sellotape.
Yeah.
With some buttons that were covered in glue and we were told they weren't for anything.
The hot forbidden buttons.
No.
Sweating under gaffer tape.
No, Joel, you're wrong. They just didn't do anything.
No, they...
Yeah. I don't know what you were told. I've also
Do you know what was on ITV?
No.
Do you know what was on ITV? It was just on the buses all day.
See, that's why I wasn't allowed to watch it. Because people on buses are common, Joel. Just dreadful. Let's fast forward to 1996 on the same website, just because it's just not that different, really. It's kind of, the presenters have changed.
Yeah.
The kids' shows maybe are a bit more prominent.
But that's
now.
Christmas, isn't it? Christmas is about
doing
the same thing. The importance of ritual, and part of that is that you can start a ritual and get stuck into it within a year. There is a magnificent thing I can recommend doing. I did it for a while as a Christmas tradition. I would read. I might bother to do it this year. I got a book of. I got a Penguin classic with A Christmas Carol in it. Thought I'll read that one year. It's great. It's really good. Everyone forgets Dickens is really good.
It's very good, wasn't it?
Yeah,
good.
Turns out he's very good at this. And then the next year, I thought I'll read some other bits in it. And there's some ghost stories and some Christmassy stuff in there,
which you love.
Which I like a good Christmas ghost story. Yeah, so yeah. Maybe. Just when you're too full, read something. And there is a thing in there where Dickens talks about his nostalgia for Christmas and kind of Dickens invents Christmas and our relationship with it. And it's this lovely little essay about how Christmas today isn't the same as it used to be.
Oh.
And he's all nostalgic going, well, it used to be better. All the toys were better. And it just is like a columnist writing.
No way.
Could be written last week. But all the stuff he's being nostalgic for, oh, the real toys with the proper nutcrackers and the real.
Wow.
And it's just about saying whatever happened when you were a kid is what you think Christmas is.
Yeah.
Even if you're Charles Dickens, you're nostalgic for.
Yeah.
It's all sort of, oh, it's got all commercial now.
Brilliant.
It's lovely. It's
brilliant.
If you get the Penguin, Charles Dickens' Christmas writings or something, there's a lovely essay in there about the Christmases of his childhood. And he's moaning about it already because it's all about you repeating the things you used to do and them not being quite as good as they used to be.
Well, there we go. I mean, that's TV has certainly carried that on and our memories of it. I'll jump now to 1996, 3:10 p.m. after Her Majesty has addressed the Commonwealth. Noel's Christmas presents, as you so rightly remember, this is 1996. So he enlists the help. This is great. This is Noel Edmonds in a nutshell.
He's presenting it from inside a nutshell.
He literally is. He's had one built in his mock-up Tudor mansion.
Crinkly nutshell.
Noel Edmonds enlists the help of Prime Minister John Major and US President Bill Clinton to turn a young girl's poem for world peace into a spectacular event at Walt Disney World in Florida.
Oh, my God. And to Noel, that would have been a chance for John Major and Bill Clinton to meet him.
Of course.
A special treat for these two men to meet
Noel. They'll be talking about it for years to come, I imagine.
That's amazing. This is high pomp Noel as well, isn't it? Because Mr. Blobby's a couple of years beforehand.
Yes.
Total Noel dominance, mid-90s. Oh,
my gosh. Just absolutely. He's out of control. I think that's what Blobby was, wasn't it? The out of control id of Edmonds. Noel Edmonds. Which is ironically how he pronounces his name now. He lives in New Zealand.
Oh.
I read the delightful thing the other day that this is earlier this year, he's moved to this quite big property in New Zealand. He's bought up a lot of land. Some nice New Zealanders asked if they could build a cycle lane at the perimeter of his property. And he said, no, this is war. And Edmonds is at war.
This is brilliant.
Kia ora and good night. Yeah. So do keep your eye out on the internet for the ongoing battle of the cycle lane in his new hometown. Also following this world peace event that he's throwing at Walt Disney World in Florida, absolutely off its head. He's also making dreams come true with the help of Christa Berg and Anthony Newley, who's currently starring in the musical Scrooge. There we go.
That's perfect.
I was just as a side note, I was delighted to see. I went to see Wonka, and you've seen it, haven't you?
Yeah,
but like an earlier version,
yeah.
Because you're fancy and you know the guy who made Wonka. Mm. But the Anthony Newley and Leslie Brooker's music, which is so crucial to everyone who loved the Gene Wilder, you know, that version.
The Wonkaverse.
Is in the new one and just makes it so perfect.
You need to.
You forget that Anthony Newley, apart from the whole Joan Collins thing, very talented songwriter.
Yes. Broke all the rules of comedy. He's brilliant.
Oh, go on. What was that film he was in?
It's not his TV series, called The Strange World of Gurney Slade.
Gurney
Unbelievable.
Slade. That's right. You went a bit nuts for that.
Fourth wall breaking 60s thing.
Yeah.
It's like finding out that, I don't know, that Robbie Williams created Monty Python. It's the most unexpected thing. He's like this sort of light entertainer and he does this astonishing fourth wall breaking. It's like The Prisoner, but as a comedy show. It's brilliant.
It's funny you should mention Robbie Williams, actually, because I think in 2000, which we'll have a look at in a minute if we get time.
Is that his Christmas?
No, there's something called Robbie the Reindeer.
Oh, yes.
And he narrated it. They tried to make out that he'd written it. I mean, they didn't try and make that out, but
it was
sort of like, so Robbie, he's a reindeer now and he's writing children's stories, is he? No, he's not.
Yeah.
Top of the Pops was introduced by the Spice Girls. It's 96. Of course it was. Nobody else could have done it. Keeping Up Appearances before the Queen. Lovely. Then Noel. Bit of Animal Hospital, something about Brambley Hedge. Jurassic Park. So that was the premiere that year.
That's good, 3 years.
6:30 p.m. Yeah.
3 years later, that's pretty good.
Oh, and Auntie's Christmas Bloomers with Terry Wogan.
You always need one of those, don't you?
Yeah, then it's EastEnders. Only Fools and Horses, The Vicar of Dibley Christmas Special. Lovely. And then they repeated Morecambe and Wise from 1970 as if to triple and quadruple down on its status as an important part of Christmas.
That's interesting. 96 there, you've got three good, solid BBC One sitcoms that people like and will draw the family around and will all agree to watch them.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so lovely about Ghosts being in the schedule this time around is there is a nice family sitcom. We're not just bringing back an old sitcom or doing a documentary about how lovely it was when the Royal Family was on TV.
Yeah.
There's actually a contemporary sitcom that's going to have an episode. Yeah. And when you look back at these years, they're all dominated by variety and comedy. And it's very strange that in the golden age of television, we're so fixated on documentaries, reality and drama that you end up having to bring back comedy rather than make new comedy.
Yeah.
It is really nice to see there's three or four comedy shows in there in the mid-90s, and they're good solid ones.
When we were allowed to just watch sketches and things, and that was fine.
Yeah.
Before they were banned, you know, in the great banning of comedy.
Well, it's just because comedy's expensive and high risk, and it means that it comes to Christmas and you go, can we crack out a comedy? And you go, oh, we forgot to make any.
Yeah.
And it's literally, I love the fact that this year there is a really good, successful comedy on BBC One that's going to be the key
fair,
to
let's be fair, there's
Christmas.
Two. Yeah. Mrs Brown's Boys is never not one of the top rating things at Christmas, even though I'm personally not into it. But you're right, to have Ghosts, which just feels like a much broader appeal, but kind of without losing people.
People are rude at Mrs. Brown, but it's a stalwart, it's a little...
it's really successful.
You need, for a good unifying Christmas, whether you need someone who can do it. You need a Brucey or a Eric and Ernie or an Anton Deck or a Michael McIntyre, and you might take the piss out of those people, but they can do the job. Paul Daniels, they can do the job.
They absolutely can. That's really funny. I was just scrolling through BBC Two on the year 2000 Christmas Day, and saw a programme called The War Wagon, and just thought it was The War Wogan, and was getting excited about it. But it wasn't.
John Hurt plays The War Wogan.
It's another Kirk Douglas film. But they could have done something more interesting there.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What I want to talk about, which I fear now, I think it's a worthy subject for any podcast, but Christmas for me, that as soon as I'm old enough to appreciate it and I'm allowed to stay up late enough to watch it, Christmas just becomes the day we get to watch Victoria Wood just throwing her selection box of brilliant comedy sketches at the screen. So in 2000, it was All the Trimmings, which is kind of a classic of the genre.
It's a very good one.
She gets Delia Smith in to do like a, I think she's Mrs. Cratchit in a kind of Dickens parody that's just absolutely hilarious. Derek Jacobi. I think Roger Moore in The London Eye. There was a spy spoof. Is that the same one?
Yeah, there's a real feel that she's been given the Eric and Ernie thing of you want to see some amazing guest stars.
Yeah.
And you want to... And maybe a little bit of that's been stolen, that specialness, by things like Strictly and by Comic Relief and Children in Need.
Yeah.
That model of saying you want to see people out of their comfort zone doing something different. The novelty wears off.
Yeah.
When they're celebrity everything on TV.
I know.
And it used to just be there would be a Christmas special where you'd go, oh my God, Roger Moore's joined in.
Well, we know the origin, the seed that it grew from is the dancing newsreaders. It's those.
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember or if I just remember watching a show about nostalgic Christmas television, which is the tragedy. Those Frank Boff in a sailor's outfit doing the hornpipe, you know, with his fellow newsreaders. That was for me, and obviously Rippon and her legs and all that. That was the beginning of that breakout genre that it's turned into a genre in itself.
Dancing newsreaders.
The celebrity.
And it's all, Neil Forsyth told me a brilliant thing because he'd researched, who writes Guilt and Bob Servant and things. But Neil Forsyth,
a genius.
Told me this brilliant thing about when they were making those Eric and Ernie shows, that it used to be on a small television.
Mm.
It was amazing that Vanessa Redgrave had turned up and you could see her face. That's her. That's an actor. That's Andre Previn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as televisions got bigger and more detailed, the newsreaders was the first moment that you could have a row of people.
Oh, I see.
And see their faces because the televisions got bigger. And it was one of Ernie Wise's and Ernest Maxim who did their dance routines said we could have six or seven of them. And now you'd be able to see at home that it wasn't just a row of faces.
Oh.
That you'd go in close on the chorus line and they would be revealed to be these famous faces. It always reminds me of the cover of Band on the Run. Where there's celebrities in it. It's a bit Sergeant Pepper. Like there's a crowd of people and suddenly you go, oh, look.
You're spotting them in the
crowd. They're all well-known faces. But it was because televisions had got bigger.
So you needed abundance.
Yes.
This is Busby Barclay's rule of abundance. You need a spectacle, otherwise you're not filling the screen.
You fill the TV with stuff. And increasingly, that's what you get with that lovely opening thing on a good Strictly where they all come down the stairs and you go, it's all the faces I know.
Yeah,
someone from EastEnders and it's a newsreader and it's that same impulse.
And
fill your screen.
But with lots of TV shows, Victoria Wood was not immune to that. Yeah. She'd always have... I'm about to say she had Anne Widdecombe. She didn't. She dressed up as Anne Widdecombe for a big dance routine with all of the Robbins family, Kate Robbins and her many sisters and brother. And there were celebrities. There were always sort of really famous people would show up. Who was in that? Who was running the cafeteria when Maxine Peake was still like in her dinner ladies phase? And she played a character and she came in and someone really famous was serving in the tea bar. I can't remember who it is. This is basically like Christmas with your family.
Yeah.
It's just toothless old relatives. That's me and Joel just going, so who was that person, you know, with that thing? Who were they with the, you know, they had the smile and the glasses.
But you want Richard E. Grant knitting and you want
Eric. Oh, no, that was my favourite.
And Hugh Laurie and...
So I think that's one of the best things. Richard E. Grant as an embittered caretaker who wants to join the WI. Derek Jacobi is the embittered caretaker. Richard E. Grant is an unhinged man who wants to join the WI and ends up going to great lengths to try and join. And then Lindsay Duncan, I think.
Yeah, everyone's
in. And they kind of play WI like ER. And it's so brilliant. And then the tea urn dies and they're trying to resuscitate it.
That's the brilliant. That's that brilliant dinner ladies fact, isn't it? That she did that she wanted dinner ladies to look like an American single camera show, and they did it as a Big Dad's Army, one of the last big
studio sitcoms,
huge cast, expensive bells and whistles, studio sitcoms. But she wanted to look like ER, which is a sort of it's a sketch joke.
Yeah,
but in that Victoria Wood and all the trimmings, they do WI stroke ER as a sketch joke.
It's very good
because she loved telly.
She loved telly,
and that's I think what the lovely thing about Christmas telly is that the budget goes up a bit and people who love telly get to really pull the stops out and
they
give
do.
You a proper show.
And actually the one, I mean, I think it's still beloved by her fans, but probably not as talked about, is Christmas Day 1991. She did All Day Breakfast. I think it's 1991, unless I got the date wrong. It sounds early to me.
Yeah.
So it was basically her and Duncan Preston being Richard and Judy.
That's brilliant.
And every 5 seconds she'd go, oh no, I love him. Oh no, but I love him. Just brilliant. And they were just essentially saying that the BBC had rejigged its schedules and now there was just going to be that show on from breakfast to bedtime every day forever.
Yeah.
And they had a new, the first four times daily soap opera, The Mall.
Just
really brilliant, cheesy things set in a shopping mall. Well, obviously it was just another chance to do Acorn Antiques in a slightly different guise, but it was just as good, just as funny. Everything about her, I think because the stuff she made was sort of so universal, and you're right, she was becoming, she had become the go-to person. Ghosts would have been if they could have carried on. The thing that we're all looking forward to on Christmas Day, the funny thing, the thing you undo your buttons to and just really laugh at. And I think towards the end of her time doing stuff for the BBC, I think they treated her quite badly.
Yeah, she had one.
And shifted her programmes around the shoulders, didn't put it on Christmas.
She had a Christmas Day show they put on the 26th or 24th or something. She went, well, hang on, I'm that. And what else are you going to put in that slot?
And she was right, genuinely. It's like, treat her nicely.
But you need
give her the space. You
need
know?
To gather people to have a treat thing. And the treat thing, it was so nice when they Russell T Davies managed to get Doctor Who to be on there.
Oh.
A thing that your kids will say, can we gather around and watch?
Genuinely.
Because I think increasingly as people are going to disappear around the house to their individual screens.
Yeah.
Something that you all want to gather around and watch, whatever it is. And again, we're being very BBC here, but whether it's Strictly or something, there's something that you might all have a reason to come around and watch. That's what Christmas Day TV is about.
Yeah, no, it's gathering. It's a fireplace. It's absolutely vital that we do that. My only other really strong memory of Christmas telly is, and it is, it's probably more than 1 year, but obviously was a massive Blue Peter fan.
Mm.
All through my childhood, I was a Blue Peter kid. I did collect things for the Totalizer. I did, you know, all of that stuff and bought the annuals. I got the annual every Christmas as well.
Yeah.
My mum made me the sledge, which was, there was a blueprint, a woodworking blueprint in the Blue Peter annual. Made me and my brother each a wooden sledge. They didn't run. They looked great, but they were shit. The plastic ones are much quicker. but we didn't tell her that. And that was fine. And we were very happy with that. We still got one in the shed, haven't we?
Yeah.
But have we told the story before on a podcast? We can tell it again. Everyone's drunk. They'll have forgotten. The main visual image from Christmas Blue Peter, obviously, is the Advent crown.
Yes.
And, you know, they're really dangerous. They had real candles on plastic
coat tinsel. Hanger, tinsel, flame.
So dangerous.
Yeah, really, everything about it. But obviously, the way you know the Advent crown is dangerous is if you look up a picture of the Blue Peter Advent crown, the man lighting it is John Noakes, a man who will only do dangerous things.
It's either him or Peter Duncan.
Yeah,
but covered in sort of like body armour.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, yeah. It's John Oates, and the next picture is a full body burn, and he's gone up and he's going, oh no, my bum's on fire. Yeah, and he's doing it, I don't know, at the top of Nelson's Column. But it's,
yes, always.
Yeah, and it's an incredibly dangerous Christmas ornament from the past.
But I remember obviously watching it on TV and thinking it was exciting. And yeah. Obviously, I don't think I ever said to Mum and Dad, like, oh, can we have one? We weren't like that gaudy or anything. We did, sometimes Mum and Dad would go to, you know, midnight mass as a kind of festive way to get, you know, to get things going. But other than that, it wasn't like we needed to mark Advent in any sort of religious way. It was more just there's that tinsely thing on Blue Peter. That means it's nearly Christmas. It was exciting. The Radio Times, et cetera, et cetera.
You watched them light a candle every week. Because if you want to light a candle, it's for Advent. It's for every week or the build up to it.
You'd have
to leave it burning in your house.
Completely insane.
Or you'd have to live in a cathedral.
I mean, how many houses burned down because of that? I don't know.
That and chip pan fires and people falling asleep with a fag on. Apparently, we don't need firemen anymore because we've stopped doing Advent crowns and chip pans.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah. If you have an Advent crown, it just negates your insurance like straight away. You're on your own if you're doing anything stupid like that. But one year, the BBC were moving Blue Peter from TV Centre, which was obviously being sold off tragically, and they're moving everything up to Salford. So they had a big sale, basically, didn't they?
They're clearing out their junk cupboard.
But this was in the middle of summer, I seem to remember.
Yeah.
So, and you went along, and it was my birthday. My birthday's in July. And for my birthday, you got me from the Blue Peter junk cupboard a kind of tin, sort of an old-fashioned tin. It might have been biscuits or something. Yeah, it might have been tart and shortbread. But in it had like the tallow candles and some...
A little bit of tinsel, some a wick.
Yeah, and a couple of coat hangers.
Yeah, and I thought this is... It was like a clue. I went, oh, this is the box.
It was genuinely one of the coolest things you've ever given
me. The tin box.
And
it was
so exciting.
It was, no one had noticed because it was just a tin box. And I went, I know what this is.
Yeah.
It was like, I felt like, I don't know, if you were like a really, really good archaeologist and something, or a paleontologist, and you saw like a broken thing, went, that's a T-Rex's skeleton.
Yeah,
it was the broken fossils of our childhood. It was a fossilised bit
like
of childhood.
It was like you discovered it. It wasn't like put on a plinth and they
the
weren't charging £1,000 for it because it was a piece of Blue Peter history. They were just like, take what you want, get out.
It was a tenner for charity. It was for whatever their appeal was. They said, put some money in the charity box and you can take... I took some T-shirts and some gonks and some stickers and things.
Yeah.
And there was a tin box and it contained the Advent crown. People go, oh, what was inside it? What? Well, nothing. Because the point was they'd made an Advent crown out of that box.
It was the leftovers, bits and bobs. We still, literally in a box behind you, we still have the tallow candles. Because I can't bear to use them.
For wicks, for lighting.
They look quite old, so it tapers. Yeah. I thought, I don't know why I'm saying tallow candle, like I'm a medieval lady. I just like saying it, tallow candle. What are they called again?
Tapers.
Yeah, tapers. They're just tapers.
Yeah, it was the evidence something brilliant had happened there. And it was only a bit of childhood magic. And obviously, we got it. Everyone said, did you build one? I went, no, you don't build an Advent crown. No one did.
But you say that, but then I did try to, not a fire hazard one. Like, at the time we were still living in our flat, I didn't want our flat to burn down. But I did want to kind of attempt a recreation of one. But stupidly, I think I just thought, oh, it's a muscle memory. Like, I know what they look like.
Yeah.
I don't need to look up pictures. I'm just going to make one. So I got, I think it's 4 coat hangers.
Yep.
They're wire coat hangers. You imagine the formation. You kind of make one into a kind of cross shape.
Yeah.
You invert the other two, make those into a cross shape.
An inverted cross.
But then
I got the devil.
And then the demon appears from the floorboards. And then you kind of, you know, lash them together and cover them in tinsel. I did all that and I hung it up and I thought, it sort of looks like... Why doesn't it look like it? And I looked it up and it turns out I shouldn't have tethered the top to the bottom. It should have just been dangling free in a kind of more, you know, who designed the Advent crown?
Like Margaret Parnell.
Really?
Yeah, it'd be Margaret Parnell. Margaret Parnell.
And she says that that's what an Advent crown looks like, even though it's basically coat hangers and tinsel and there is no tradition for that. She just decided.
Yeah, it's Margaret Parnell. She was a one woman coming up with things factory.
I feel like I've let her down.
We've all let Margaret Parnell down. I buy things from shops.
Was she Tracy Island as well? Because that was
she's
a Christmas
all of them.
Thing.
She was this absolute like unsung genius.
Just MacGyver.
She was fantastic.
Blue Peter MacGyver.
And you forget as well, the whole point of Blue Peter is it's supposed to say any kid can do this whether they've got money or not. The hidden public service thing of Blue Peter makes is that they were supposed to be accessible to
all. And they were.
Even though no one had sticky wrap plastic and getting the bits for it. I remember waiting all week
for the washing up liquid bottle. Yeah,
it's that. So it did. They were related to consumer culture, but the idea being that you should be able to do it. And it's not really.
But
really
byproducts of it's supposed they're supposedly upcycling as opposed
a bit wombly.
To get down the market and buy that. Yeah, no, exactly.
I love Blue Peter makes.
Oh no, I did too.
But the Advent crown's one that no one should try.
No. I think it's.
Pro.
I mean, you can do it, but I promise you, you'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
And also, like, I mean,
true meaning of Christmas.
I mean, yeah, just disappointment. That's right.
Training the kids up.
The build up and then the big boo. Yeah. I did have 1 year for Christmas when all my friends were Barbie families. It feels like this is ITV, BBC.
Yeah.
I was Cindy, my mum and dad, when I'd probably asked for a doll when I was younger. They got me Cindy. I really liked Cindy. Cindy did have a horse.
Yes.
Just a plastic horse, really, you could sort of awkwardly perch on top of. So I did get the actual official Cindy horse, but that was the only bit of, sort of Cindy merch I was given. My mum was really into dressmaking, so she did make Cindy dresses.
Yeah.
Very sort of cloth kits and, you know, homespun. And then Blue Peter made presumably they couldn't use brand names, but they were like a dress-up doll wardrobe.
Yeah.
And they showed you how to make from, I don't know, washing up powder or washing powder packet a wardrobe, which it was really nice. And I remember it always smelt of washing powder forever.
Yeah.
Because it does. And it had like sort of blue and pink and white sort of patterned sticky back plastic wallpapery type stuff on the outside. And then she made little handles with paper fasteners. And it was actually really cool. And I used it for ages.
Do you have a thing? That's just reminded me that the thing about all Blue Peter makes, especially if your family ended up keeping them for a while, because we had washing up bottle wombles. Remember those? And I remember making the Doctor Who theatre. And the thing you remember is the smell.
Oh, yes.
Because it smells of whatever it was.
Yes.
So
yes.
My brain goes, every time I see a Dalek, I go, that smells of Lenore. Fabric softener. All Daleks smell of fabric softener.
They do.
And all wombles smell of fairy liquid inside. In my head. Because that was my childhood.
Oh, that's so sweet. When you were a kid, obviously you've got two brothers younger than you. Was TV a big part of your Christmas day, or was it just like a punctuation?
To be honest, it's really funny. Yes, we did. And we weren't the kind of family who did lots of them. We'd do board games and charades and mess about and things like that, which I know
you're proper, like Victorians.
Yeah, we did. But my dad, I think the first time I watched a Queen or a King's Speech was a couple of years ago. We never did that.
Yeah.
We would watch a lot of TV on our own in the morning. My fond memories of family TV were often just with my brothers watching things. We'd watch a lot of the morning stuff, Disney Time and things like that.
Yeah.
You forget that. The only time you could see Disney clips was on a programme called Disney Time.
That's it.
It was all shut away. And my favourite thing to watch with my brothers was they would often do making ofs in the morning.
Oh, they're so exciting.
They'd show you the making of Raiders of the Lost Ark or making of a Bond.
Which is just another chance to see a little bit more of a thing
you
already love.
More clips of things. You could go to the cinema once a year, but you could see some clips of some exciting stunts. I loved all that stuff. And then basically in the evening, there would be the couple of variety shows. So we would watch the magic show. We did usually watch the comedy. And the comedy lasted a long time. But even up to me leaving home to go to college, I'd come back. And certainly the big thing for us as a family, we liked Only Fools, so we always watched Only Fools. And their Christmas specials, until the late ones, were usually pretty good.
Oh, they were. They were dynamite back in the early days.
And I remember the Royal Family being a really big deal because it was a family thing. And my nan loved Liz Smith's Nana. And we did that classic thing. We go, it's just like us.
If you can see yourselves, then you can.
So we'd all gather and watch that. Or if we were getting together as an extended family, maybe on the 28th, we'd save that up on
that's
a videotape
nice.
And watch it together. So yeah, I remember that whatever the big comedy show was, we'd all watch that together. And I've got lovely memories of that. So yeah, that sort of thing. And or if it was Eric and Ernie or Paul Daniels, we'd watch that together.
Yeah. So I still don't know if we did watch those or its reruns, but I do have really fond memories of watching reruns of the Morecambe and Wise Christmas specials with Dad.
Yeah.
Because he absolutely, he loved comedy. He was just nuts about comedy.
I think
so we'd bond over that.
That stuff is, no one says that they can't wait for Christmas to watch the Game of Thrones special. As in, you don't, all that stuff that's supposed to be peak TV.
Yeah.
What you want is to get together and all agree on something. They love the communality of, especially if they're those family comedies.
That's why comedy's so hard, right? You can't all agree.
Yeah.
And if you, honestly, I just think, I mean, obviously Ghosts is beloved and it's talked about in the fondest terms and the fans are really crazy about it. But I just think it's something we'll look back on in more years to come. We went to that screening of the new series when it was new, you know, earlier this year, and the TV historians at the BFI were saying, this is about to become our remit. Yeah. You know, you're finishing the show. It's becoming TV history. It's going to be such a high benchmark. I don't know who else can reach it again. That the ability to make so many people feel warm, laugh, engaged, kind of... such a clever show and it looks so sort of simple and it's really not. It's such a hard thing to do.
Well, the other thing they're giving us as well, because they've done several of these, is a few more Christmas specials.
Yeah.
And you know this. Now that we're in an era where linear television isn't such a big deal, the thing that makes you watch linear TV that's actually on is that it's a final of something and you mustn't miss it. So, and even Strictly can't do that because they've already finished. Yeah. So you can't do, we're not waiting for the who wins The Apprentice.
No, no, no. It's just
so people are tending to sort of go into the menus on the iPlayer or Netflix and look for Christmas specials.
Yeah.
And the best
thing, they're repeating them, aren't they?
I think that's the best thing that comedy can do, is that you will probably want to sit with your family and watch. If you want to watch comedy, it might not be the one you want, might not be on TV.
Yeah.
But you can definitely, all the iPlayers, all the ITV players, they've all got them on there.
Yeah.
So whichever one you want to watch, they're on there. So you can just schedule yourself. You can be the Radio Times yourself now.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we do. We go, we've got to watch Blackadder. We've got to watch a Community one.
Well,
we've got to watch
the
Father Ted one. We've got to watch whichever one is your favourite. We will watch them.
I mean, because we're talking
to our...
And Ghost
has given us a load of those.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a week before Christmas. We've been talking to our 14-year-old, who, you know, some 14-year-olds can just sort of unplug a bit and be a bit disengaged with it all. They have quite a specific and strict schedule of things, some films, yep, some telly, that we need to watch because those are our traditions now.
I think we have the choice to do it ourselves.
Completely. And so as a family of three... we're not really reaching back into the past for these. We are in terms of it's lots of TV that was made years ago, but we always have to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas, yeah, special. That was not part of my childhood at all. Big part of yours,
yeah,
and now a big part of our child's. There's several things that we just can't miss now.
Yeah.
And obviously they're adding stuff. So this year it's like, also Die Hard. 14-year-old this year is like, the first time, I think we have to watch Die Hard. And it's like, great, okay, we're going to watch Die Hard. Amazing. And there's almost an anxiety about, we're going to have time to fill these things in, aren't we? Arthur Christmas and then the Tom and Jerry Christmas special. Those are Christmas Eve. And then, you know, it's like we've got to get this schedule planned. Otherwise we'll forget something. And
everyone gets to be their own scheduler.
Yeah.
And what you're dipping back into that sort of grab bag of stuff. But there is something lovely about putting the TV on and them ambiently having decided to show the old Fast Show Christmas special.
Yeah.
Oh, please, lovely. I wouldn't have thought. It's the way you haven't thought of something.
Yeah.
And it can just be there. If they will show an old one. I must admit, I like just stumbling upon something and not having to decide to put it on. But I think
we
all get the chance now to do something where you can curate a Christmas that means something to your family,
yeah,
based on a mixture of what was important to your family growing up and what you think Christmas means now,
yeah,
which is really lovely. Aww. But yeah, there should be a mixture of all that stuff.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Well, I think we should draw to a close this Christmas special with a carol. No, I'm joking. No. We're not going to sing.
Are we going to open the famous names box of liqueurs?
Oh, actually, yeah. Where have you moved them?
No, it's okay.
I hid those under there.
Look, there's a box of liqueurs under the Christmas tree. And
Do you remember this used to be quite the thing? Like, we'd only ever have them at Christmas. You can hear the cellophane rustling.
Yeah, unwrap them because I can see them.
But those liqueur chocolates, where are the ones that used to be like the shape of a bottle? I can't find them anywhere.
Yeah, that's what it used to be.
Because then you'd bite the top off and kind of hilariously swig the sherry from the top of the bottle.
It's not like they got rid of sweet cigarettes. You're not allowed to do it.
Rubbish.
Apparently encourages children to drink.
Make alcohol fun again.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't really be proper alcohol, can
Make
it?
Make them all
so
Warnick's
sickly.
Avocado. That was, yeah, the thing you used to get drunk on as a kid. Just,
exactly.
That's fine,
but we will toast the end of this podcast with a famous name,
if you can actually get
into the cellophane.
Don't worry,
we'll probably do it after we finish. But I apologise for the almost complete radio silence for like the last God knows how long. I have written a book. It is finished. I'll let you know when that's coming out in due course. But there will be more Box of Delights in 2024. I promise.
Hooray.
This is my vow to you. And they won't all... much as I love you, Joel, they won't all have you on as a guest. I'll be a bit less lazy about it in the year. I swear. But in the meantime...
The postman.
Yes.
Anyone nearby.
Passing the door. If you know where I live, just come past the door. I'll make you a cup of tea. We'll do a quick pod. But thank you for listening. Thank you for being so patient. And we'll see you in 2024. And until then, have a very...
Keep dancing, what?
Shut up, Joel. Have a very happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Thanks for listening. You can find links to the YouTube clips from today's episode on our Twitter feed, at Box Delights Pod. Come and say hello. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.